Session number 7175, reel 1.
Sir Alexander Stanier, reel 1. When did you arrive in France in 1918?
In May. I took a party of three other officers. We proceeded on our own. We didn't go to the base camp. We went straight to France, reported to our details. And the next morning, I was told to go up to the line to take over from an officer who'd been killed. I reported to number 2 Company, 1st Battalion Welsh Guards, in the trenches near Arras. Here, we were holding the line about 300 or 400 yards away from the Germans, who had dug in around the village of Blainsville. We were only 3 officers in the company. We took it in turns to be on duty in the front line, whilst one slept and the other had his meals. Most of the day, I either rested sitting on the side of the trench on a fire step, or visited the various sections along the trench. I was accompanied by my soldier servant, who had a SOS rocket in his rifle, which if we were attacked at any moment, I would order him to fire, which of course was a very light. It was rather an awkward operation, as the rocket could be seen quite often peering over the top of the trench. The Germans were rather inclined to have a shot at it.
Were the Germans very active along that section of the front?
No, not very. Considering all things, I think it was supposed to be rather quiet, despite the fact there was quite a lot of... There was always the odd casualty, or a mortar bomb fell in the trench, but not really, not one of the bloody places.
You mentioned they would possibly have a shot at your distress rocket. Does this mean that they had snipers deployed in that area?
Very much so. On our left, the Canadians were holding just opposite Arras and opposite Vimy Ridge. The Vimy Ridge was actually in the hands of the Germans at that time. And the Canadians were extremely good at patrolling. They had snipers in every kind of willow tree and things, and they kept the Germans at a long distance, much further away than we did.
Did you not have snipers in your company?
Oh yes, very much so. Yes, trained people. A certain number of them were always on duty in special hideouts and saps going out into no man's land.
What was their main role and purpose?
Oh, to see that Germans didn't take any active part, pushing forward and walking about and getting on with repairing their wire particularly. There were always holes in the barbed wire.
So it's really to restrict enemy activity in daylight.
That's right.
Was the trench a continuous line?
At that point it was, with tremendous number of communications trenches going back to support lines and reserve lines. We would be 4 days in the actual front line, then we'd be 4 days in the support line, then 4 days in the reserve line. It was only in the reserve line that you could really take your boots off and wash your feet, perhaps.
How long was the stretch that your company had to hold?
Oh, quite a long way, I should think. 500 yards.
How many men did you have in the company at that stage?
At one time, I know my platoon was down to 12. Usually it was about 16 when it was reinforced. It should have been, of course, over 20. I forget the establishment.
So you should have had about 80 men or 100 men in the company.
Yeah, that's right. Because part of the company would always be left in reserve behind to fill up the casualties.
What was the sort of distance between the front line trench and the support trench?
I never went over the top, so I can't tell you, but I think it was about 200 yards.
And then would the reserve be...
And then the further, much further back, 800 yards.
Did you have machine guns deployed in your company area?
No, they were further back and came under brigade arrangements. They were brigaded or certainly under battalion. No, brigade.
What about light machine guns, Lewis guns?
Lewis guns, we had I had four sections in my platoon, two rifle sections and two Lewis gun sections.
And what was the main employment of the Lewis guns?
Oh, to cover the front. To give volume of fire support.
Did you have special positions for the Lewis guns marked out or constructed?
No, I think they just took the part of their trench that you selected.
So mixed in with the riflemen?
Riflemen, yeah.
Did they operate singly or in pairs?
Singly.
You mentioned that you were occasionally mortared by the enemy. Did you come under any heavier fire?
Yes, certainly. There'd be a stonk, I think we called it, and down it had come. The Germans and us had an agreement somehow that in the evening when the rations came up, you could hear their rations coming up and all our guns were quiet because we didn't want them to fire back at our rations, which were also coming up. But of course, the transport people did have quite a hard time sitting up on the top of horses, pulling up these limbers.
What did the rations consist of?
Oh, very much bully beef and butter beans, bread, margarine, jam.
Did they come up hot?
Yes. In Dixies, yes. They were cooked on the cookers, and then we tried to warm them up if we could.
Did you find the food satisfactory?
Well, it was very dull. We got a certain odd parcel sent out by our parents from home. Those of us who were rich had them from Fortnum Masons. Others had them from the local grocer in the village.
Did you get these parcels regularly?
The parcels and letters were very good, really.
Now, you mentioned that you had casualties. Did they tend to come in rushes, or were they a steady trickle?
Holding the line there, it was a trickle. It was the odd shell and the odd mortar bomb stonk that just caught A section. But the Germans weren't attacking all the way along the line. They just sort of plonked down one place.
What happened to these casualties? How were they handled?
We had... The stretcher bearers were always of a very high standard, were very brave men. They were always prepared to go up over the top and collect the chap out of no man's land, which was sometimes extremely difficult with all the barbed wire. They did have shell holes to fall into if shells and bullets came. All the same, they were the bravest you could find. They would bring them back on the long stretchers with wooden poles at the side, and the most awful job carrying them down the trenches, they bumped against the side, but they got them back to battalion headquarters. They might stop at company headquarters and have a rest and adjust them a bit and give them field dressings, see that they were all right, because we all carried our field dressings just inside our jackets.
When a mortar or an artillery stonk came in, what was the usual procedure for dealing with it in the line?
Oh, to try and fire back, and you didn't send up the SOS because that brought down the whole of the divisional artillery, and you weren't very popular if you did that, because it meant immediately the Germans retaliated. No, you would call up company headquarters, battalion headquarters, and the battalion would bring their mortars into them. They were brigaded, the mortars. Stokes mortars, they were called then.
Did you have dugouts, bomb-proof shelters, to get into if a stonk started coming in?
Yes, nearly all the company headquarters had had quite a good dugout. The first place we were at was Boyel, and we had it the cellar of the station master's house at the railway station. The station was completely destroyed, but the cellar was still underneath. Another place was at a farm, and where the Germans had been, and had dug a terrifically deep dugout, I remember.
What was the view like over the front of your trench? What's the terrain like in front of you?
Very flat, with two or three little villages surrounded by trees. I've mentioned a Blainsville, and there were several others like it around there.
These were brick built?
They were, yes, very much mud with pantiles on the top.
How far could you see, do you think? How far away is your horizon?
Quite a long way. But absolutely flat and derelict ground, because nobody had ploughed it for a long time. There were quite a few partridges about. I remember trying to shoot one with a rifle.
What sort of soil was it? Was it chalky or was it clay?
Rather clay. Heavy loam. Very good for crops when they were grown.
What was the wire like in front of the trench? What sort of density was it, and how far did it extend?
In front of us there were really only about two lines. One just in front of us, then there was quite a big no man's land, and then you came to the German wire. And it was the German wire we'd patrol at night to see if they'd got any holes in it and where they were likely to come out. Then we would aim our snipers at that point so that we knew where they were likely to come from.
Was your own line of wire continuous, or was it in clumps to try and break up an enemy attack?
No, continuous. But it was always being broken. Every night we had to go and mend it or cut a new hole so that our patrol could go through.
How far in front of the actual firing line was the wire?
Oh, 50 yards.
When you went out on a patrol, presumably they were always at night, was reconnoitring the enemy wire the only activity or the only objective of a patrol?
Yes, because really, to find out if he'd got any new posts, really, that was the thing. Had he pushed forward? Did there seem to be more soldiers there than usual? You could hear them talking.
When you were on such a patrol, what was the most important sense? Was it sight or was it hearing?
Hearing. Definitely.
So it was essentially a listening patrol.
Listening patrol. Yes.
How many men would you take with you when you went out on such an expedition?
About six or eight. Six, generally. Because you could then get them into a shell hole if you halted.
And did you select them at random, or were they specially picked?
Oh, no. Well, if you had time, which you generally did, for instance, the first patrol I ever did, I took enormous amount of trouble over. I was told what to do, which was to find if there were any gaps in the German line, wire, and if the, any new German posts. I spent the afternoon explaining to the patrol what we were going to do, where we were going out, where we were going along, where we were coming in, and at the time. I also went round the posts in the company and told them exactly what I was going to do. I'm going out at number one post at 9 o'clock at night. I shall be travelling along with six men, and I shall come in at number eight post on the left at midnight. As a result of that, we started off at the appropriate time. Directly I got out, the Germans began shooting, but it's frightfully difficult to see or to hear where the shots have come from. One moment they come, and it's all black again. So I halted in a shell hole and listened, and we made some marks, and we moved on very slowly. And the same thing happened again. These shots began coming, so we stopped and listened. And I put... I looked out at one end of the shell hole and my corporal the other. But unfortunately, we'd taken much longer doing stopping, which I hadn't accounted for, doing this operation. And the moon kept on coming out too, and we had to sit while the cloud covered it up a bit. The consequence was, at midnight, at about 11 o'clock, instead of being halfway along the company front, I was only still practically opposite where I'd gone out. One of our soldiers looked out with a Lewis gun and saw two men, me and the Lance Corporal, looking out over the top of a thing. He said to himself, "This can't be our patrol, it's got six men." The officer said he would be halfway back and be in at midnight right down the thing, and these chaps are opposite me. He says he shouted out, challenged us, but I never heard any challenge. The next thing was he opened up and shot the corporal in the head. He fell down dead back into the shell hole, and I jumped back pretty quick too, the other side, and I then popped my head up again. He had another go. So I lay in the bottom of the shell hole shouting the password until an officer heard the shouts and stopped the firing. And eventually we came back. And the result was that, of course, there was this terrible mistake that I'd said that we'd be six men and the man saw two. I said I'd be moving faster than I thought. And one should account for that.
So, lesson learned, presumably, is it's best not to give too detailed
well, yes, a plan. And say, this is I plan, but don't think that I'm going to keep to it. Because I noticed on all my other patrols, I always broke the patrol up. I never kept it all together. After a time, I kept on fanning it out, saying, "You look there, you look there." And anybody watching would say that that's not the patrol we expected.
Did you always have an officer with such a patrol when it went out?
Practically always, unless you were absolutely down to bottom.
What sort of equipment and weapons would the members of a patrol like that carry?
We blacked our faces. We took as little as possible. We'd take quite a lot of grenades. But I think everybody took their rifle. I would generally be wearing officers plus fours, but an ordinary private soldier's tunic. Particularly so that if the German saw us, he wouldn't recognise me as an officer.
What sort of distance do you think you usually cover on a patrol?
That night I thought I was going to do at least 500 to 600 yards, which sounds very little, but if you're crawling on your belly at 500 yards, it's quite a long way.
So you would normally spend about 3 to 4 hours covering about half a mile or so.
That's right, yeah.
And having a good look.
Have a good look.
How close to the German trench did you get when you went on these expeditions?
Oh, then certainly 200 yards. Less, 100.
Did the Germans indulge in the same sort of activity?
Far less. But they did, but far less. We were much more aggressive.
Did you ever actually see any Germans in no man's land?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, yes.
And what was the usual reaction when you saw enemy in no man's land? Did you go to ground or did you try and...
We went to ground and shot at them at the same time.
Did you ever hit any of them?
Yes. I missed an officer, but... I don't know that I actually shot one myself. I know I missed the officer I shot at. But we shot them because we saw them lying there afterwards.
How many of them were there, do you think, when you met them and shot at them?
Oh, I think very much the same as us. About six or eight.
Did you ever take any prisoners on patrol?
I didn't, but other patrols did. But they were taken more on raids, which was a different operation to a patrol.
How frequent were raids as opposed to patrols?
Not so often. I shouldn't have think that they averaged more than one a month. It's quite an operation to plan, and quite a dangerous operation.
And you didn't actually go on one yourself?
I never did. I replaced an officer who'd been on one and was killed.
Did you know anything about the enemy who were opposite you?
No.
You didn't know what regiment they were from, or...
I don't think so. Never. Not that I remember. Because I was only what we call an ensign and was thinking of other things.
When you were picking a man for a night patrol, what sort of characteristics were you looking for?
Oh, I'd always prefer a countryman to a townsman. We in the Welsh Girls were very lucky. We had a lot of miners, and they were marvellous people. They knew all about the dark and down in mines and things. I had a very good runner who was a gamekeeper, who acted as my orderly.
Now, you said that you didn't normally pick men at random. Did you actually have a section or two sections who were specifically tasked and specially trained for patrolling?
No. Because casualties came and the swap over took place. But you had time in the afternoon. You were generally, in the trenches, okay. There was plenty of time to talk to them and say what you were going to do.
So you got an impression of what they were like.
But when you got into a mobile warfare, it was much more of a hurry and a rush.
What did you normally do when you were in the trenches during the daytime, when you were on duty in the front line? What was the daily routine like?
Well, we stood to at dawn. Everybody had to be up and dressed and in their fire position. And they remained there for an hour as it got light, because that was the time they expected. And the same procedure at night, just as it got dark. Stand to and all the officers were on duty and everybody else. There was the trenches to be mended. There was the sentries to be inspected to see if they were alert and awake, getting reports from them, sending back reports to company headquarters. Meals to be served out, and men to go back for meals or meals to be brought up to them. The day went extremely quickly by the time you'd repaired the damage.
The damage was from enemy shell and mortar fire.
Did they?
The damage was presumably caused
by
enemy fire.
Yes, mortar fire and and shellfire.
What sort of repair work was done? Was it a matter of filling sandbags, or was it revetting, or digging
both
fresh?
And certain regiments and brigades and divisions were very much better than others, and we in the Guards Division prided ourselves that we always had super trenches. And of course we had fairly deep ones because of the men being 6 foot high. Some of the soldiers coming from other divisions found our trenches were too deep for them.
We had to stand on ammunition.
Well, we had, yes, fire steps. They had to build them up.
If I might return to patrolling for a minute, I think you've probably done some training in patrol technique when you were at Sandhurst. How did that compare to the real thing?
I don't think it was taught frightfully well at Sandhurst. We did go up into the woods at the back and do a lot of compass work there and losing ourselves up by Caesar's Camp and all those sort of places.
Barossa Common.
Barossa Common, so on. But where I really learnt it, I went for a short course, I think of a week, with the Canadians, and they were marvellous, and they taught me a tremendous lot.
Was this actually in France?
I went out of the line for a week, when we were out of the line anyhow.
What was actually wrong with the training at Sandhurst then? Where was it deficient?
Well, having been a guardsman and an adjutant and everything else, I'm very keen on drill and discipline. But I don't think we spent enough time really living in trenches and learning the technique of being out at night enough. I slept in my bed too often at Sandhurst.
So it was you didn't get enough practice in administration in the field and field craft.
I think we could have done more now, looking back on it. We crammed a lot in, I'm not saying it, but we did a tremendous amount of drill and PT and all those sort of things. And we also learned to ride. All those sort of things had to be crammed in that time.
What did you normally do when you were actually out of the front line and out of the trenches?
Oh, we had training, and there always seemed to be new forms of training that generals had devised while we'd been in the line. And we had to get in new drafts, they had to be taught, and we were always having inspections of kit and seeing that everything was clean, smart, and up to standard. We had a lot of time for games and fun, but it was pretty. There was a few cinemas. We went army ones, but there were no. You couldn't. There was no social life. There were no girls about the place.
This was an immediate area behind the line.
Yes, anything that we went to, I never saw.
You say there's a lot of training. What sort of training was it mainly? Was it basic?
Oh, for attack. We were being taught how to attack. We spent hours behind the line in June. At the time we were out of the line in June for a time, we spent doing artillery formation, blobs, and then breaking out of that into straight lines and rushing the enemy at the last minute, and a lot of bayonet fighting and so on.
So the main manoeuvre then would be the advance in roughly diamond-shaped formation.
That's right.